Totally Football Show. And there's four players better than him, apparently. Champions League, we're between two legs, and Liverpool just got shafted by a goat. Meanwhile, in London, great Van der Beek off makes Spurs crumble. We talk chances for comebacks for Barca and Ajax, and preview the weekend, Man City, Leicester, and Liverpool going from the Jordi Alba to the Jordi Shore with a crucial clash in Newcastle. All that and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming all the way in for you to talk bull about tactics, formations and football science today are Michael Cox.
Hi, James.
Duncan Alexander.
Hi, James.
Hi to you, Duncan. And Julien Laurent, who's dressed up all spiffily because you're doing French TV later, Jules.
I am indeed at the Emirates for the Arsenal-Valencia game.
I'm looking forward to that. Arsenal coming hot off the back of three straight defeats. Yeah. And with a mighty clash with Brighton awaiting the weekend. All things we'll talk about later, but of course, listener, we want to talk about what happened Wednesday night as Liverpool visited that cauldron of noise and colour that was the Camp Nou.
Yeah, the colour being the key word. They had a nice big English tifo at the start of the game.
The whole kind of one side of the stadium just read out, "We're ready to colour Europe."
Which is an ambitious project.
Duncan, you raised the question, which would be the most difficult bit?
Yeah, I went with Western Norway. With all the islands on the edge. A few people suggested to me the Finnish lakes or Western Scotland. But Barcelona, you know, if anyone can do it, they can.
Right. Let us know, Barca, if you need more crayons or anything like that. For now, let's concentrate on the extraordinary performance put in by their team and their star on Wednesday night. How extraordinary? This extraordinary.
Guanya el Barça 2-0 davant del Liverpool. Semifinals de la Champions. Pica Messi!
A little bit onde cero there, or onde cero, Michael Cox. Come to his name, intriguingly, is Ricard Torquemada. Torquemada, you know, of the Inquisition. I don't know if he's any relation.
Okay.
But he certainly loved that Messi goal. I'm guessing it was the free kick.
Yeah, if he did that for the tap-in from 2 yards, I think he's gone OTT.
Right, okay. Although that was a fun goal as well. So Barcelona meeting Liverpool in a much-anticipated clash on Wednesday night in the Champions League semi-finals. The Catalans 3-0 winners. Harsh, many people feel, on Liverpool, who had more shots and more possession. Barcelona, though, had more Messi.
Yeah, he was the difference. And he almost acts outside the tactical battle. I thought it was a pretty even game. I thought Klopp's approach worked quite well. They had three chances, Liverpool, that I'd say were the equal of the chances Barcelona created. But he does have the ability to rise above everything that was going on and decide the game. The free kick is the kind of thing we've seen from him repeatedly over the last 18 months. It's maybe the area where he's improved the most. He's always been a really top-class player in pretty much every attacking sense and was always a decent free kick taker. But the level he's got to over the last 18 months, he's just scoring, I would guess, more prolifically than we've seen pretty much ever.
Wait, yeah, you said that. Oh, have you looked into it? Because I've looked into it as well.
All right. Well, what did they find?
He's got 8 goals from direct free kicks this season, which is one more than Man United, Man City and Liverpool combined, which is good. But some people were saying he's now better at direct free kicks than he is at penalties, which is a bit of a stretch because he's scored 5 out of 6 from the penalty spot this season and 8 out of 56 from direct free kicks. So we are only really remembering the ones that go in, but he has improved.
But to the point of Coxie, how he's improved in that department. He scored as many free kicks between 17 and 19, so in the last 2 years, 15, which is as many as he did between 09 and 15 as well, which was 15. And if you look at the attempts and the goals he scored, for example, in the 2011-2012 season, he scored 3 out of 55, which is a very, very low ratio. It's like a Cristiano Ronaldo type of ratio,
right?
You know, or Marcus Rashford type of ratio. But now he's far more efficient.
Well, Steve McManaman was much happier with those old times when Messi wasn't putting the ball in from that range. I'm not having it, Fletch, as he memorably opined after that free kick on Wednesday night. And some people, here's listener Ali Patel, who says that the goal is as much poor preparation from Alisson as anything else. Messi keeps scoring the same instep free kick into that postage stamp this season. From 35 yards out, He never scores from open play, so just have no wall, and if he stands in the middle, Alisson would save it. It is true that as the ball takes flight, you can see Alisson behind the wall taking a vital beat before he sees what's happening. But then again, if there hadn't been a wall and Alisson just stood in the middle, Messi would just do something else anyway, wouldn't he?
Maybe. I mean, first of all, it's actually the wrong side for the postage stamp, I think you'll find. And second...
Is there a side for a postage stamp?
It should be top right, shouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Letters.
I mean, the point that I think was slightly overlooked, and I hate to give a caveat, and Jules is not happy with this, but the ball did take a slight deflection
of
Gomez. A really slight
Gomez
deflection.
Gomez's own goal. Shoulder. I'm counting that.
It takes a nick of
just
Gomez.
A little bit, and so I'd have some sympathy with Alisson. However, I do agree with the point. I'm a little bit surprised he didn't put the ball the other side, because I genuinely thought Messi was going to go for that top corner and put it in there, and Alisson would have watched videos, so I'm a little bit surprised he didn't go the opposite way.
Messi very much the star on Wednesday. The opening goal, which was as beautiful if not more, was not of his creation though. Jules?
No, he wasn't, and I think the finishing of Suarez is obviously very nice, very good. His run is very good. But the ball from Jordi Alba and the way he hits it and how low it is, it's just sensational. And I think, okay, you can say that maybe Virgil van Dijk, his positioning and the line at the back is not good enough. And you could maybe blame a little bit van Dijk for that. But the ball is such of a quality that I think for any defender in the world, it would have been almost impossible.
Suarez, who's standing in front of van Dijk, helpfully points out to van Dijk and anybody, this is where I'm going to run.
But he goes too quick then.
He goes so
and
quick.
And the ball is so good. And it's the way as well they've done it all through the first half, the diagonal from either Piqué or Busquets towards Jordi Alba, who at times, as well as the tactics from Klopp worked in that game, if you don't shift especially your midfielder on the right hand side quickly, then Jordi Alba has 3 seconds by himself to get the ball and then cross like he did on that goal.
I agree with Jules. I think that was the one area where Liverpool were weak and where Klopp maybe didn't do it right tactically. When we saw the lineups and we saw that essentially they're playing a fourth midfielder, I mean obviously that was because of the Firmino injury, but I wondered whether he would have used that to kind of shift the shape and maybe put Milner out there and just have someone to basically man mark Jordi Alba, because I think I've said a couple of times on this podcast before this season, I think he's the second player you have to stop. Messi's the first, and sometimes you can't do that. Alba's the guy who you kind of can realistically deal with.
Obviously they played Joe Gomez instead of Alexander Arnold, and if there's one player who's been putting in balls like Jordi Alba in England this season, it's Alexander Arnold, and I don't think they got enough out of Gomez to justify what they did there, and they'd have probably been better off playing Alexander Arnold and having that ball.
What about the big Messi Virgil van Dijk duel that everyone was looking forward to? Much made of that moment when van Dijk's flapping his arms saying, come on, give me some help over
that's
here.
That's not what he did. He said to Robertson, you were in the wrong position in the first place. Van Dijk should never be with Messi on the touchline. This is Robertson's position. It does. Your centre-half cannot, well, or shouldn't go out of his, you know, centre-back position too wide like that, chasing Messi and leaving a huge gap behind him, with Robertson obviously stepping in and you know, they swept. But I think the only thing Van Dijk is saying to Robertson is, this is not my role, this is your role. He's not scared of Messi. He doesn't ask for anyone to come and support him.
Right.
He's just saying to Robertson, this is where you should be and not me.
Maybe I've noticed it more because he's usually so calm and cool against most opponents, but I think in the bigger games this season, Van Dijk has had a couple of dodgy ones. I mean, in the 0-0 against Man City,
he gave a penalty.
He made that ridiculous tackle on Mahrez and was lucky that Mahrez scored the ball over the bar. Had that gone in and City won the league, we would have said, well, maybe that's the turning point. I mean, he's been the best defender in England by a long way, but he has had a few dodgy games, I think.
In Paris as well, in the Champions League. I mean, they're away from the Champions League last night, and they lost 4 games all away from home, which is more than in all the other games. They've lost 3. Yeah, they've lost 3 in all other competitions and 4 in the Champions League.
Interesting point, actually.
And away from home, they've been really poor. And in Paris, I mean, he had Lovren next to him, which is a liability. And I remember being on the show after that game, and we said that Van Dijk looked tensed because he had Lovren next to him and anything could happen with Lovren. But yeah, I get your
probably
point.
Probably worth pointing out as well that Joel Matip was probably Liverpool's best defender last night, I thought. And
what about Barcelona at the back? Because they looked super. Ter Stegen, fantastic. Will Frost saying, when was the last Barcelona side to be this solid at the back?
Well, I think that's slightly judging it on the scoreline, because Liverpool did create 3 clear-cut chances, and on another night they could have scored 2 or 3 goals. So, and then we'd be saying this Barcelona team isn't particularly good at defending. And don't forget, this time last year, or in the quarterfinals, they, you know, they won handsomely at home to Roma and then got turned over in the second leg. Yeah. So it is a massive long shot, but I don't think Liverpool are completely out of it yet.
OK, because it's 3-0, but it could have been 4 had Usman Dembele not Dembele'd it up, gone Dembele up.
I don't remember if he was right-footed or left-footed on this one, so he just messed it up.
Spurs had a couple of chances like that when they broke from Liverpool corners or Liverpool set
pieces. It was
pieces.
Reminiscent of the England-Argentina 98 World Cup with Darren Anderson chasing, but Andy Robertson used three lungs to get back and one of them at the end of the game.
Anyway, so yeah, 3-0 is the score against a Barcelona team that blew a 4-1 lead in the quarters last year, and given that they're Liverpool... And, you know, 3-0 down halfway through a Champions League clash, it means that we have to talk about comeback chances. What do you think, Michael? Can they do a Roma? Or is their best plan just to enjoy Messi, you know, having a nice close-up view of him?
I think they've got a small chance. I think Salah, Firmino and Mane is probably the best front three in Europe. I think they can score 3 goals against any opposition. It probably won't happen because they probably won't keep a clean sheet, and that will leave them needing 5, which is probably too much.
The first 20 minutes will be crucial. If they can score then, I've seen a few people say, or maybe Messi will get injured and that will help, which it obviously would, but I think it's worth pointing out he hasn't played fewer than 40 games in a season since 2006-07. He's, you know, as well as being brilliant, he's incredibly robust. Mm.
And he's unlikely, I imagine. Will they even use him this weekend? They've already
They've won the league.
Jules, what do you think? Liverpool
as an expert of remontada, being a PSG fan, I think I can talk about this subject very, very well. I agree with the boys. I think there's a slim chance, and if you know, the atmosphere would be incredible in that game, and you could expect the fans to really support the team and push the team. And I think if they can find a goal early, or at least put pressure early and create something, and get in the game, then yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before that, on Saturday, Liverpool meet up with Rafa Benitez in Newcastle, with a chance to retake the lead in the Premier League and put some pressure on Man City. We'll talk about that match later on, because up next, Spurs Ajax.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Madrid, Turin and now Seven Sisters Road all have fallen to one of the finest young footballing teams we've seen in a long while. Michael Cox and Julien Laurens were... You had the pleasure of being up close with Ajax on Tuesday night at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Great atmosphere, Jules.
Yes, for the first 15 minutes. And after the Van der Beek goal, it just got so quiet, which is understandable, because I think the Spurs fans I had high expectations, high ambition in a game like this. It looked like that was, you know, a huge opportunity for them to reach the final, at least easier than facing Liverpool or Barcelona, for example. And Ajax were so good and Spurs were so bad in the first half hour that very quickly I thought, I don't know if Coxie agreed with me, but quickly I thought the atmosphere went a bit down, because they realised how good Ajax were. And the most nervous team looks being Spurs and not Ajax. And the tactical plan from Pochettino clearly from very early on looked like it was not working at all. And then suddenly there was just one team there and one set of fans, which were the Ajax.
Right. The tactical thing did shift with Vertonghen's injury. But let's talk about what happened in that opening half hour and the Van der Beek goal. So much time that he could even play around with Lloris a bit, doing a little, am I going to shoot, am I?
Yeah, it was funny watching that live, because it felt like he had about 5 seconds where he was just pausing, waiting for Lloris to go down. And I think sometimes in those situations, players try to be too clever and almost dink it over the top. But he was very good. I thought he was excellent in the 2 games against Juventus. I think I said before, not a player that's got as much hype as De Jong and De Ligt, but yeah, his midfield runs and his getting beyond the striker, I think, is such a crucial thing when you're playing someone like Tadic, who isn't an out-and-out goal scorer, he's a creator. And they deserved that from the first 20-25 minutes. They were by far the better team. After that, I thought the game was relatively uneventful, really, but Ajax really took control early on.
So Vertonghen has that horrific clash of heads with Alderweireld. There's all the controversy about the fact that the doctors send him back on, where his legs go and he vomits, and then they realise maybe this might not be the best idea. He's going to have a brain scan, I believe, today, ahead of... Well, I don't think there's any question of him playing at the weekend against Bournemouth, but potentially they might think about using him in the second leg. As usual, there's a wealth of medically informed people talking about what should happen in these cases.
Yeah, I thought it was slightly disappointing that for the rest of the first half after that happened, there was a lot of talk about concussion protocol, which was obviously a serious thing, but you know, there's a Champions League semi-final going on. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's 6 days, isn't it? So he, if the brain scan's okay, he should be okay to play in the second leg.
Okay. But let's talk about the change. So Sissoko, who people were very disappointed not to see in the starting lineup, does come on, and that makes, is that's what swings the game, is it?
Yeah, it did work out well for Spurs on the night. I mean, I don't think Sissoko was 100% fit. I think he would have started, was he 100%. But it did improve Tottenham. I think the problem was they then kind of asserted control of the game at points in the second half. But they just didn't have the attacking options. They didn't have any player in the final third who could really threaten Ajax going in behind. And, you know, that was the problem with losing Son. You know, with him back in a second leg, I think Spurs have so much more attacking threat.
Okay. Stein pointing out that in some ways the second half was even worse for Spurs than the first one, in which they actually conceded because they had the tactical superiority but still couldn't create any chances. What do you think then about how optimistic Spurs fans should be? A lot of them saying it's still game on at 1-0.
It's not.
No?
They're still in to go through and they still have a chance. And I think, I don't think a 1-0 lead away from home is an easy lead to defend at home. Do you go and try to score more? Do you even unconsciously defend a bit and sit a bit deeper because you say, if he stays at 0-0, we're going through to the final, we're qualified. You know, of course, it's better to win your first leg, especially away from home, than losing it. But I'm just not sure how easy it is to approach the second leg at home like that.
For Ajax?
Yeah.
I mean, their second legs have been so awesome so far.
Yeah, but all away from home. And they were never through before the second leg either.
Does that make that big a difference?
Surely, yeah. Because right now, if he stays 0-0, they don't need to attack. And if they don't concede, they go through.
Right.
Which was not the case in either of the two previous rounds where they had to go and get the qualification in the second leg.
Sure. And also, they've been playing with such freedom as well. It's the second leg of a Champions League semi-final at home. There's going to be a point where the pressure...
Is
yeah,
there?
Mounts.
I mean, when they came out on Tuesday to that wall of sound and to that wall of sound, you could have expected them to show even a
they're kind
moment
of used that. You know, they've gone to the Bernabeu, they've gone away to Juventus, and they've kind of coped with that. But I think
what I've got
different.
So far from you is the fact that they're 1-0 up and they're going to be playing at home are both major disadvantages to Ajax's chances of making the final.
No. It's good, obviously,
right.
But it's just in the way you approach the game. Yep. It might get a bit tricky on, you know, do you go, because if you go and attack and let yourself exposed, that's not the idea, right?
Sure.
So, you know, do you go for it? And we've been saying all season they play the same way, home and away.
Yeah.
So you can expect them to go for it at home as well. But they have got the advantage that they would be silly to just go and, you know, and left their defence exposed.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Okay.
I agree with that.
And what about Spurs tactics? If Ajax are kind of revisiting their glory days of the 70s, should Spurs equally dust off the English traditions of just hoofing it upfield?
Yeah, they you know, without Son and Kane, they were very much based around Llorente. But I think De Ligt handled really well Llorente, the physical threat. He's just so good all round. And I was really impressed with Ajax's defenders, actually. This was an interesting game because, obviously, Spurs' three centre-backs were all from the Ajax school in various ways. So it was an interesting clash between kind of Ajax old and Ajax new. But I thought the way that particularly Daley Blind was just hitting balls through the lines in the first 10, 15 minutes, breaking that press, was so impressive. And then after half-time, there was a period where the game went a little bit flat and I was just watching De Jong, just watching him for 5 minutes. And he was playing this double role where not only was he basically man-marking Dele Alli, but he was always checking over his shoulder and positioning himself in front of Llorente to prevent balls into his feet. And this guy who's 21 and quite slight and a creative midfielder in a sense was helping to shut down two of Spurs' main attacking threats. He's just so intelligent and so good positionally. And, you know, I guess that awareness is why he's so often first to the second balls, which some would say was a major reason why Spurs didn't do so well.
I was amazed by how disciplined they were tactically without the ball, Ajax.
Right. This is I think, why I have some questions about Spurs' chances in the second leg, because the second half, was that as much about the fact that Ajax went, well, we've got our lead, we just need to shut this down? Spurs had more possession, 60% in the second half, 10 shots. They passed the ball with more accuracy than their opponents. But was this actually Ajax, just a young team that knows when to play and when not to?
Well, Ajax didn't have a shot on target after Sissoko came on, so it's a slight chicken and egg.
Although Neres hit the post, which, you know, could have easily been a goal and a quite special goal as well, the way the build-up went.
Mm. One other thing, Spurs looked absolutely cooked in that second half. And Dele Alli in particular, is that fair?
Yeah, I don't think he's anywhere near fit. And I think there's a few players on that Tottenham side who, yeah, are just exhausted. It was obvious in the game against West Ham. It was obvious here. I expect Pochettino will make a lot of changes for the Saturday early trip down to Bournemouth. But yeah, that is a major factor, especially when you consider that Ajax had the weekend off beforehand to prepare as well.
Spurs with something of a weekend off this time, while Ajax will have the cup final. So it'll be interesting to see how full of pep these youngsters are come next Wednesday. And, of course, facing Son Heung-min. Comeback chances, Michael?
15%.
For Spurs?
Yeah.
Obviously. Don't get that.
16%.
Really? Julian, a big 17?
14. So I had to go right. Lower.
Okay. Well, up next, we'll talk about the weekend in the Premier League.
Klopp's on the ascendancy, mate. He's the real king of the north. No way. How many Champions Leagues he won? Rafa's a proper king of the north. He won that with us. And you betrayed him. You must be thinking of Rafa circa 2005, not 2019 there, Mr. Newcastle fan. But don't worry, because with Paddy Power, not all your mistakes cost you as much. Get money back as a free bet if Mane scores for Liverpool against Newcastle. Paddy Power, home of the money back special. Selected markets only applies to first bet on all losing goal scorer, correct score and what odds Paddy bets on the match. Actually fund £10 as a free bet. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Two games to go in this Premier League season. Three things to be sorted out. The title, the top four, and will Cardiff go down? Intriguingly, former Liverpool managers who now pepper the Premier League like kind of former Doctor Who's pre-regeneration. I see Roy Hodgson, for example, in the William Hartnell role. But anyway, former Liverpool managers have key roles in all three questions this weekend. Isn't that right, Duncan?
It is. We've got Rafa Benitez trying to stop Liverpool, which he's never done before as a manager. And we've got Brendan Rodgers, who has given Leicester some more verve in the last few weeks.
Right, and William Hartnell with Palace down at Cardiff.
That match features the oldest ever clash of managers in Premier League history, and possibly top flight history.
Right.
Thinking of life expectancy data. don't want to get too dark.
But, no, sure.
So we've got the 70-year-old Neil Warnock
right.
And the 71-year-old Roy Hodgson.
Wow.
And if you add that together, 141 years, take that off now.
Yeah.
Go back to 1878. That's 10 years before league football even started. So that is what they're playing for in Cardiff.
It's as old as football, or in fact even older. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And the interesting thing, I mean, or not, I was talking to a Palace fan the other day who said Palace away at Cardiff will play the kids. And I looked a bit perplexed. He went, well, if Cardiff win, who does that put pressure on?
Brighton.
And who do Palace hate more than anybody in the world?
Brighton.
Three Bridges.
No, you usually.
Yeah, me, sorry. Me and Brighton.
And Brighton.
Imagine if I was Brighton captain. God.
Yeah. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. Of course.
No, of course.
Right, at the top, though, there's that title battle. It is only 1 point between Man City and Liverpool. Liverpool have Newcastle. City have Leicester. Which is tougher, Michael?
I think it's a lot tougher to play against Leicester, who are in good form. And City lost to them early in the season. It's funny, this weekend of fixtures was, the reverse fixtures were played on Boxing Day.
Mm.
So basically, I think everyone kind of forgets about them because you're always doing something different on Boxing Day and you kind of just watch Match of the Day when you're drunk and forget about it straight away. But there were some interesting things in these matches and, yeah, mainly Leicester beating City.
Leicester beat City. And what did Newcastle do against Liverpool?
They lost battered. 4-0.
4-0. But you know what else Newcastle did not long after that?
They beat City?
They did. They were the last team to beat City. They got a great record, I think. I mean, they shipped loads of goals, but they got a good record since the turn of the year. Ayuzi Perez has 7 in his last 7 at St James's Park. It's not a given, that, is it?
Well, to back up Michael's point about Leicester, I think of City's three defeats this season, the ones to Palace and Newcastle were very much, you know, City did everything except score enough. But the Leicester one was probably the one where they were most outplayed. So I think of all, you know, it's the closest that a team has come to sort of, you know, being genuinely better than City.
Okay. And that was under their previous manager, of course. Under Brendan Rodgers, are they more or less likely to do damage to City?
I think they're better going forwards. And they, if you do XG goal difference, so you take a team's XG this season and their XG conceded.
Their XG difference.
Yeah, essentially. Leicester fourth in the Premier League, which shows they've been pretty good actually all season. So all the numbers do kind of suggest that they have got what it takes to beat City, but you know, City easily could win 4-0.
Okay. There's no Kevin De Bruyne. There's no Fernandinho. Is that correct? Yeah. And it's going to be interesting to see what Brendan Rodgers, the Raheem Sterling whisperer, will be able to do in terms of, you know, tactically boxing in one of City's key assets.
And also, Jurgen Klopp is renting Brendan Rodgers' house in Liverpool.
Is that
and
right?
If Rodgers and Leicester City beat City or get a draw,
yeah,
Brendan surely can put the rent up and Klopp would be, yeah, that's fine, you just want me the title, double it up, triple it up, whatever, no problem at all.
All right. Do you think that Brendan Rodgers' house still has all his pictures up on the wall of Brendan Rodgers and that?
Yeah, or he's maybe in the basement where he had his gym,
right,
and probably, I believe, still have the gym, has the charts of how well he was doing, putting weights. And obviously, Virgil van Dijk rents Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's house.
Is that right?
Yes, so, you know, I'm not sure that I've got something around that, but yeah. It was
do you think Brendan Rodgers actually collects rent from Jurgen Klopp?
But he's a good tenant, Klopp. But on the other hand, if Leicester get battered by City, Klopp could thrash the house and just say to Rodgers, well, it's your fault, you should have done better.
It's an interesting angle. Liverpool, by the way, just returning to their side of this duel this weekend, their last four visits to the North East haven't won any of them. So,
And what do you do if you're Klopp? Do you rotate massively? You can't, I mean, Origi, Sturridge up front?
Yeah,
but if you keep the same one and then you play them again next week against Barcelona, it's a lot of, like, games and pressure and so...
Do you go, the Champions League is gone, I've got to focus on this, I've got
to get... Which you could.
Yeah. Or do you rest players?
No, I don't think they'll be resting any wholesale players from the outset. I think they'll hope to get the job done on 55, 60 minutes and then take off some players, but... They've got to put not all their eggs, but most of their eggs in their Premier League basket now. And then the Barcelona game's a bit of a free shot.
Okay. So get the win on Saturday. It's the late game on Saturday, this.
Very late.
Very late, yeah.
And this puts... Why, how late is it?
7:45.
Which is the way it should be. Let's be honest. Under the lights. Football is so much better than your 3 o'clock kickoff. Where you've just finished eating and it's just like... Anyway.
Right. Anyway, okay. So then that means that Liverpool... If things go according to their plan, wake up Sunday morning and Monday morning in the lead with one game to go, but then it's all down to Newcastle and how much... but then it's all down to Man City and Leicester and how much pressure is going to be on that Monday night game.
Yeah, I mean, this Monday bank holiday has been quite a big day in recent years in the Premier League. It was the 3-3 between Liverpool and Crystal Palace that kind of decided the title. It was the Eden Hazard goal against Tottenham at Stamford Bridge, which... You know, won the title for Leicester. I only know this because it always clashes with the World Snooker Final and they're thrown frantically changing between channels.
I see. Okay. Wow. It's going to be a fascinating long weekend of football. Do you care to make a prediction or should we just wait to see what's going to happen? Let's wait to see what's going to happen and move on instead to the battle for the other top four places. I say a battle, the kind of weak flailing that's going on between Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal and Man United, to give them their current order in the Premier League standings. Spurs, who are 4 points clear of Arsenal in fifth, as we mentioned, will be visiting Bournemouth. Fourth place, Chelsea host Watford in what could be Eden Hazard's final appearance as a Chelsea player at the Stamford Bridge. Man United are at Huddersfield and Arsenal face Brighton. Just having a look at those games, Spurs have already beaten Bournemouth 5-0 this season.
Yeah, Eddie Howe seems to audition for the Tottenham job by always losing really heavily against them. So Tottenham have averaged 3.1 goals per game against Bournemouth in the Premier League, which is the best record, their best record against any team.
Wow.
So
how many goals?
3.1 a game, which is quite a lot.
That is a lot of goals. Okay, and Bournemouth, I mean, they're a little bit unpredictable at the moment, let's say.
Bournemouth have been on the beach, both figuratively and literally, since about October. So
well, literally since before... You know, geography suggests.
Since the Jurassic Age, possibly.
Yeah, possibly so. Okay, that's Spurs then, who you're suggesting will get 3 points?
I think they will, yes.
Okay, Chelsea, who are in Frankfurt this Thursday evening. Difficult game, that one. They haven't won in three matches. Hudson-Odoi very much out. And Willian's in doubt as well. And they could be about to lose Eden Hazard. Is he going to do something special in this final game?
Well, he's been modelling their new kit, which is quite nice.
Okay. We had, I don't know if you heard this, listener, but the other day we had Pat Nevin in, who was, with a nod and a wink, suggesting that maybe he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I don't believe that a second.
No?
No.
Okay. Well, in which case, will this be, will he go out with a real...
He was brilliant in the reverse fixture, actually. So I remember from Boxing Day. He played as a false nine, but he was just dominating the game so much. There's so many games this year where Hazard just, the game is all about him. I thought that was the case at Old Trafford. Yep. Chelsea just kind of given up on the attacking section of what Sarri wants in terms of the pass and move. Just give it to Hazard and see what he does. And yeah, a lot of the time he comes up with something.
It's maybe a subject for another day, but the message boards are rife at the moment with people suggesting Chelsea could be better off without Hazard. And there's
no,
Michael's answer.
No.
All right, Arsenal are losing Aaron
Mickey
Ramsey.
Mickey Hazard, maybe. But...
Arsenal are losing Aaron Ramsey. He has confirmed that due to that hamstring problem, he's played his last game for the Gunners. It was that 2-0 win away in Naples, in which he scored... which is, I think, the only win they've had in their last five. They've lost all four of their other matches. Oh, my word, they're in a rotten run of form as they take on Brighton.
Yeah, although no South Coast team's ever won away at Arsenal in the Premier League, so...
There's that.
Yeah.
Okay. And, well, if they beat Brighton, of course, that gives Cardiff hope, which then sets them up for a really bitter defeat at home to Palace, or Palace's kids, depending on what Roy decides to do. Saturday tea time...
You can't do that. I mean, I know there's what Palace fans will want, but you can't play your kids just to try and spite one of your rivals. That's not going to happen. Especially Hodgson. Hodgson doesn't make changes to his team anyway.
Okay. United are also still in with the top four chance.
And they've got the fixtures. They play Huddersfield and Cardiff then, so on paper.
They should stroll past Huddersfield, which makes it the perfect kind of fixture for Anthony Martial, given his recent... stats. The game against Chelsea had him running. Oh, I think actually for the season he's running on average 8.5 kilometres a game, which sounds a lot to me, but is a lot less than, say, for example, Juan Mata, who's doing 11.3. In fact, Martial, the worst running stats on. And did you see him in the warm up? I'm doing air quotes on in the warm up before Chelsea.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. He was kind of just stood there whilst everyone else got their, got the muscles going.
Right. If he's good enough for Messi, then.
Yeah.
Just right. On Huddersfield,
yeah.
Obviously they've been trying to break a lot of records this season. There's still a couple they can do this weekend. If they lose, they'll equal the all-time top-flight record for home defeats in a season, which is 15. Nice. And no team in top-flight history has ever scored fewer than 10 goals in a season, and they're on 9.
At home?
Yeah, at home.
Okay. So there's a real chance of setting a new mark there. United Technical Director news... I was looking forward to seeing Mike Phelan taking over that role, but now they're talking up Rio Ferdinand.
Who ticks a lot of the boxes, to be fair, because I think you would want someone who obviously has played for the club and hopefully well, who knows the manager, the players, which he does, mm-hmm. who, you know, good social skills and everything, which I think he has. I think since becoming a pundit, he's opened up much more than maybe when he was a player. I mean, it depends exactly what they want. I don't think they want someone who would do all the transfers, so who needs a huge address books with a lot of agents and a lot of relationship with those agents. I think it's someone that links a bit everything together, the recruitment, obviously, but also the first team with the board, the academy and all of that. And I think for that, he would be a good person.
Nice for them to be the ones doing the murking for once on the transfer front, perhaps.
Maybe another candidate would be, because you can see what Solskjaer wants from his staff. There's one... quite important factor in mind. I see John O'Shea has retired from football this week. He used to play for Manchester United, so that's the main box ticked for Solskjaer. So okay. Maybe they could get him in.
Tell you another player who used to play for Man United, Paul Pogba. Hey, Jules. Yeah, that's not fair, though, is it? I did like his response
fair.
To Graham Souness. Graham Souness, or Souness, rather, was suggesting the usual things about Pogba. And Pogba said, there's no problem. They can say what they want. They're paid for that. Paid to say things in front of the camera. I'm not paid to speak. I'm paid to be on the pitch and fight for my team. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if Souness would say that tactics don't really matter in football, he would never say anything like that. So I think everything he says must be right.
To be fair to Souness, he said, those things don't matter if you don't get to the ball first.
Yeah, but how would you get to the ball first? If you set up nicely tactically, you will.
The answer tactics, that one, Graham.
Exactly. Actually, the tactics makes you be on the ball first.
Right.
I looked at Souness's last few games as a Premier League manager at Newcastle, and they did have the most possession in his last six matches. Okay. So they did kind of stick to that ethos.
And how were the results?
One draw, 5 defeats.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not all about results. Brackets, it is.
Hey, listener, you might think The Economist only concerns itself with economics and finance.
But you'd be wrong, because it covers loads of topics across politics, business, science, technology, arts, and the environment. There's even a bit of sport in there too. For example, this week I got my Clever on, finding out all about the comedian who's just become Prime Minister of Ukraine, which is really interesting. And also, I went back into the archive to read up on the linguistic universe behind Game of Thrones. I know. The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing your world. So if you're the sort of person who never stops asking questions, get your free copy now by texting the word football to 78070. That's football to 78070. Also in action this weekend in the Premier League, Everton taking on Burnley. West Ham, fresh from their triumph at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, although everyone's doing it these days, will be hosting Saints, for whom Shane Long has got 4 goals in the last 5 games.
He scored 3 opening goals as well, obviously one particularly early recently, and Southampton have actually won none of those matches. So,
okay.
But I love players who kind of do well at the end of the season, just out of nowhere, and this pits Antonio against Long in a classic.
Antonio, and if Antonio scores, what will he do for a celebration?
Dread to think.
Right.
I like to think.
Yeah, he's had some. The last one was quite troubling, but there have been some really special ones before that. There was a kind of Gangnam Style one. We mentioned the carpet stroking.
Yeah.
And the Homer Simpson and all that. Anyway, we'll see. That's Saturday, 3 o'clock. And also at that time, Wolves hosting Fulham.
I like that game because it's the match between the prediction everyone got right at the start of the season and the one everyone got wrong. So Right. Everyone said Wolves are going to finish seventh, which they will be there or thereabouts, and everyone said Fulham, yeah, they won't do quite as well as Wolves, but they'll be mid-table.
Make a prediction about this one then, Duncan, because Wolves have been terrible against the bottom sides, and Fulham are on a 3-win, 3-clean-sheet streak.
Fulham are the BST champions, as I'm calling them. So since the clocks changed, they've been good. So,
brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right, well, that's all the Premier League we've got time for, because after this, we're going to touch on the Football League and lots of other exciting things from around the world. Prospects for PSG, all that kind of thing after this.
Hello, I'm Caroline Barker and you can find me on the Totally Football League show. And this week we're talking this.
It's not better than Someone in the Bushes, though.
No.
Can't be.
This.
Now, I would argue that Derek Adams and Kevin Bond maybe didn't stay cool ahead of the weekend games.
And this.
Love going to Sheffield United. It's one of the best noises you hear outside the Premier League.
Is that generic enough for you? That's the Totally Football League show with this. Available every Tuesday. Just hit subscribe and download on your preferred podcast app to listen to more of our dulcet tones.
Nice to see Caroline back. Although the other people were great as well. Speaking of the Football League, in the Championship, Michael, it's the final round of games. Yeah. Leeds, West Brom and Villa are definitely in the playoffs. You will recall that Norwich and Sheffield United have already sewn up a little P next to their names on the table. That other P is going to belong to one of those three teams and somebody else out of Derby, Borough and Bristol City for the final spot. Although basically, Duncan, it's Derby, isn't it?
You'd think so. Yeah. Of those three, only Bristol City fans have hit me in the face, so I'll probably go with Derby.
OK, Derby are at home to West Brom. Borough are at relegated Rotherham. Bristol City will be hoping to hit Hull hard. Why did a Bristol City fan hit you in the face?
It's a long story.
OK. Anyway, that's all very exciting. Villa host Norwich in a game which could determine whether the Canaries take the title. They only need a point. Moving on down the ladder, the pyramid, Luton and Barnsley are actually moving up the pyramid. Sorry, they've just been promoted from League One to the Championship. Luton back for the first time in the second tier in 12 years. Taking their places in League One, presumably Lincoln. Still warm, are Bury and Tranmere. Dan Curran asks, how about showing some love for AFC Wimbledon? AFC Wimbledon. Are you across this story, Michael? 14 no. games ago in February, they were 10 points adrift in Division 1. Where are they now? 2 points above the relegation zone. Asks Dan, what is the largest points gap a team has overcome?
Don't know, but they have done well.
Okay.
I spoke to a Wimbledon super fan that I know, and basically they've done what I think that's quite common in League 1 and League 2, which is basically goalkeeper doping, in the sense that they got this guy Aaron Ramsdale in from Bournemouth in January.
Right.
He's really good. He's won 2 of their Player of the Year awards and basically transformed their thing. And a lot of teams in League One. Wickham's best spell of form came this season when they had like on loan keepers from the Championship. And basically, Championship, the big gap now is Championship to League One. Championship clubs have got loads and loads of good players in the reserves. If you can loan them in League One, you can basically transform your season.
Interesting. Interesting. All right, well, let's have a look at one or two other questions then. Dan Collins says, is there anything more annoying than commentators consistently referring to Messi as the little man? I have to say, Dan, I so agree with you. They did it to Maradona as well, and Hazard too. I find it so patronising from people who, let's be frank, in football terms, will not have accomplished anything like what Messi, Hazard maybe, but Maradona, and to have them banding around the epithet little. Is it because I myself am vertically challenged? Yeah, probably. But I just think, show some respect to you all.
They're not slagging them off, though, are they?
No, but it's such a kind of... It's a little pat on the head, like the little man. Do you not think there's something vaguely...
as well?
No,
hasn't Messi got that weird nickname as well, the Atomic Flea, which A, never gets used, and B, again, you know...
I love nicknames that never get used. Like every time Man City players do a tweet and then sign it with the hashtag Shark Team.
What?
Have you not seen that? They're desperately trying to... You
know, Benjamin Mendy's idea.
Right, to call themselves Shark Team, because the idea is that they're just this ruthless killing machine, as they proved against Spurs. Oh, no, hang on a sec. Anyway.
Well, I get annoyed enough by when City refers to themselves as citizens with a Y.
Mm. Right.
That's awful.
Okay.
Because citizens is quite a nice nickname, I think.
Yeah, but nicknames in general are quite... It's very hard to use them. You know, people that say the Red Devils about Manchester United, it sounds a bit twee, doesn't it?
The Pensioners for Chelsea.
The Glaziers for Palace.
That's another nice one. Mm. Jules, you've got a commentary phrase that you really can't abide.
Yes, I hate shooting boots.
He's got shooting boots on.
Why does that
upset you so much?
Do players have a pair of shooting boots and a pair of non-shooting boots? No, it's not. It's not because they don't miss a goal or a chance because they put the wrong shoes on and they don't have the shooting boots on. It's the worst expression ever.
Well, I was at the snooker the other day and listened to the commentary, and Dennis Taylor referred to one of the players having his potting boots on, which doesn't make sense on any level. You could maybe say he's brought his potting cue at a stretch, but his boots aren't going to change anything.
Any commentators who are listening, by the way, I also am not particularly comfortable when they talk about squeaky bum time. It's not an image that I want to particularly have rolling around.
Well, so squeaky bum time, obviously invented by Alex Ferguson. So when you think of squeaky bum time, what do you imagine it means?
The final bit of a game when you're... No, it's no,
what does it refer to?
Oh, that you are passing wind through your nervous excitement.
Right, so I think that's what he meant. But online, some people claim it's because when you get to the end of the season, you get nervous and you shift around in your plastic seat and it squeaks, but that's not it, is it?
I think it's more of a kind of... You know, one of those noises.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Also, here's a phrase you should use more, commentators. Cometh the hour, cometh the man. See if you can work that into your...
Oh, I'll tell you what else is annoying about Messi.
Yep.
Is when he does something bad and they go, oh, he is human after all.
God, that really does my head in.
That's a good one.
Anyway, right, okay, good. Oh, hey, just speaking about that Messi business on Wednesday, here's Senil de Setbal, who says, what does zonal marking think about Valverde? Something like Coutinho for Semedo. Everyone talking about Messi, but I thought that moment blocked Liverpool building.
Yeah, it was a really good change, actually. And when I saw him coming on, I thought there's a good chance he will do that. Because, I mean, I thought Liverpool's best attacking threat in the first period of the game was Robertson getting forward. Obviously, as Duncan says, with Gomez in, they didn't have that kind of threat from right back. And yeah, I thought Sergio Roberto was struggling a little bit with the speed. And Semedo's obviously a defensive player, primarily a right back, but also offered really good counter-attacking speed as well. So I thought that was a good change. And, you know, Barcelona, I thought, improved after Coutinho went off, just as Liverpool have improved since they sold Coutinho. So maybe a pattern there.
Interesting.
It's just so strange to see a defensive change like that after an hour at home for a Barcelona team. But Valverde has made them more pragmatic than they were ever with. And I think we have to accept that this is not the team that Guardiola had, and this is not the same style of football. And it's probably more effective.
Elsewhere in Europe and beyond, a big get well soon to Iker Casillas, who suffered a heart attack, poor chap. He's 37, while training with his team Porto on Wednesday. Went to hospital. Porto say that he's not in danger, and he did a big thumbs up photo from his hospital bed. He must be the Champions League's most capped player,
he is,
isn't
he? He is, yeah.
So do wish him the very best, because he always seemed a stand-up bloke.
He seems a very nice bloke. He's quite interesting on Twitter. He just randomly tweets about random goalkeepers you've never heard
in
of.
In Czech Republic, the other day, he said, like, yeah, follow this guy, the goalkeeper, Sparta Prague or something, who's having a very good season. And the guy is scouting for goalkeeper scouts all around the world.
Brilliant. Excellent. In Italy, make time on your Sunday afternoon for Lazio Atalanta, which is in that traditional lunchtime slot if you eat your lunch at 2 o'clock. Atalanta, Michael, I'm sure you're...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you appreciate a bit of them. They had a 2-0 win over Udinese on Monday evening, which means that they are now clear in fourth, the final Champions League spot in Serie A. They also knocked down a bit of their stadium on Tuesday because they don't hang around in Bergamo. They're basically redoing one stand every season. So they'll have a nice brand spanking new venue ready by 2021, they reckon. They're a point clear of Roma and 3 points clear of Milan and Torino in the race for Champions League places. It's going to be really interesting to see what they can do down in Rome against Lazio Friday night. The Serie A action begins with the Turin derby, by the way. Torino, as we mentioned there, who are
doing really well, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they're not too much fun to watch.
No, I think Sirigu
has
the most clean sheets
he
in
does,
the season,
yeah.
Yeah, which is surprising.
But
because
they're taking
it's
Sirigu
and because it's Torino.
They're taking on Juve in the Turin derby. That'd be fun. And Parma and Sam, also 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. I mentioned this, A, because they're two of everyone's favourite teams from the 90s, and they've got some of the nicest kits around, and they're doing a special kit meld for this one, for charity. What they've done is they've taken the design of their opponent's jersey, so Parma will be wearing a Samp design, but with Parma colours, and Samp will be wearing a Parma design
That's
with
really
Samp
cool.
colours. They
that
actually look really
good.
Nice.
There's a guy
There's
on
a
Twitter
yeah.
called Museum of Jerseys who does requests like that. So it's good to see it crossing into the club game.
Brilliant. By the way, we'll be doing a big Atalanta special, I think, in next week's Galazzo. In this one, we're talking all about Alberto Malassani for reasons that you'll discover if you have a listen. There's a bit of swearing in that as well. By the way, listeners, Graham sent some really nice... I think these are... sure if they're leather or what. They're Italian football coasters. Mm-hmm. That's a classic Inter jersey on that one.
Yeah.
Roma there. Oh, two Roma ones. Very nice.
Oh, wow. Good.
Yeah, for your drinks. You know, when you're watching Match of the Day drunk on Boxing Day, you put your whatever it is on this. Very nice. That's from Graham. Listener, if you want to send in gifts, very much seen in a favourable light.
Can I get some for Ligue 1, please, Graham?
Go to his website, Jules.
Okay.
TheNorthCurve.com. Let's talk about France.
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Paris Saint-Germain, they had that strange run recently where they just kept losing games. I'm glad that's over.
Yeah, I haven't followed really. I've been focused on the Premier League and the Champions League.
they lost to Montpellier this week.
And it was so bad.
Were they?
It was just pathetic.
So Neymar's come back.
Neymar's come back for the last three games now,
right.
And they won one and lost two, one including the FA French Cup final on Saturday,
right.
Where then he slapped a Rennes fan in the face,
yes.
Which he would be in trouble for, probably a hefty suspension for the start of next season, which will add to his Champions League suspension at the start of next season as well, so he might not even play between August and mid-September. But yeah, it's a rotten time right now with a lot of issues at the club structurally.
And not many trophies.
Just one, yeah, which is the first time since 2012-13 when Carlo Ancelotti only won the league at the time.
Right.
But since then, they were used to win at least one of the two cups or both even.
Okay, so Dukla Prague away kit asks, crisis or just a blip at PSG? Will we see Tuchel leave and the inevitable return of Jose?
No, I don't think. I think Tuchel would get another season. He signed a new deal before it all sort of unraveled. Since the defeat against United at the Parc des Princes in the Champions League, that incredible, humiliating defeat. But things have to change because there are far too many issues at that club internally in terms of the structure of the club and the organisation, you know, with the chairman, Nasser Al-Khalifi, with the sporting director, with a lot of the scouts and the recruitment process and all of that. And you can't just take things for granted in football. I think you can't just throw money and expect success in the Champions League or even domestically. And I think they've done that for too long. Tuchel has made a few mistakes in the last few weeks in his team selection, tactically as well. The players, for a lot of them, are already on holidays. And there's those tensions in the dressing room that I think would be very hard to to correct, you know, Neymar coming out and saying that the younger players don't listen and are too arrogant, which is true, to be fair. Alphonse Areola and Prenel Kimpembe, especially, I think since they won the World Cup with France, have gone a bit big-headed. And you see that with the performances on the pitch. But I really think there's an issue in the dressing room that Tuchel at some point will have to resolve. The problem with Tuchel is that when he signed, everyone, especially in Germany, was saying like he's like he's heavy on discipline, he's a bit like a dictator. He came over and tried to charm everyone and be friendly with the players, which is part of the problem because there's not enough discipline in that club from the top towards the dressing room, the player. Gregor van der Wiel, for example, the former right back at the club, saying that players arrive late at training for team meetings, no one doesn't say anything. And I think there's a lot of issues that they would have to solve. Otherwise, this would come back next season and the season after as well.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
Just talking to France, Eduardo Camavinga made his first start for Rennes against Monaco midweek.
16 and 5 months.
Wow. He's the first player born after Grand Theft Auto Vice City came out to start a game in Europe's top 5 leagues.
Right.
He's a wonderful talent. Signed his first professional contract only 4 months ago and then came on as a Serb 3 or 4 weeks ago and then made his first start against Monaco last night.
If PSG have sealed the title, Champions League places?
Yeah, very good. We have a huge game on Sunday night between Lyon and Lille, which is the contest really for second and third place. Lille have been amazing with Nicolas Pepe, the star of the season in Ligue 1, who unfortunately will leave us in the summer, as a lot of players will, and go somewhere bigger and better. But yeah, that's a huge game to watch on Sunday night between Lyon and Lille.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll talk about Scotland in a second or two. But first, let's get the odds on some of those things happening this weekend, courtesy of Paddy Power in conversation with producer Ben.
Thank you, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power is on the line. Say hello, listeners. Very kind of you. Lee, Liverpool were handsomely beaten by Barcelona midweek, but what's going to happen when they head to Newcastle to take on the team now managed by their former manager, Rafa Benitez?
Yeah, in Rafa we trust. To spare the country the gloating of Liverpool fans, who are currently panicked about Benitez reminding the world what a master tactician he is. But I have a few facts which might reassure them, Ben. Newcastle's equivalent to Leo Messi is Ayoze Perez. The Magpies are safe, so the biggest game at St James's Park is really between Rafa and Mike Ashley. And the home team are a huge 8-1 to win this, or 4-1 to take a point. Liverpool fans, your odds on 3-10 to win. Take a deep breath.
So not an easy game then for Liverpool. Man City also have a tricky encounter with a former Liverpool manager. That's Brendan's Leicester. Give us some numbers here, please.
There's no such panic for City, is there? But maybe they're overlooking a certain bright-toothed man. Agent Brendan goes to Manchester to undertake mission seemingly impossible, according to the odds. Leicester are 14-1 to get a win, 15-2 to force a draw. Whisper this, because nobody else is really saying it, but City aren't exactly on fire, and yet they're still 1-7 to get the 3 points.
Duncan's been taking us through some of the records that Huddersfield still can break this season. Give us the odds for their game with Man United. Can they score in this one? And I'm talking about Huddersfield here, of course.
Well, everyone else seems to be able to score against United, so why not Huddersfield, except from the fact that it's Huddersfield? They are odds on, though, to get a goal against United, 4-5. Solskjaer's men are on a horrid run of form and don't really look arsed, do they? But they're still 3-10 to win this. And it's odds on David De Gea starts despite, well, everything.
And finally, Brighton against Arsenal. Brighton are almost safe. Arsenal are in a hideous run of form. Can Brighton beat them?
Yeah, that's maybe a tougher question than you would have thought, Ben, given the timing of the Arsenal game in Europe. If they need to rest players for next week, these prices will move. But as it is, the Gunners are 4-11 to win this, which isn't a terrible price for a home game against a team which refuses to attack. Speaking of Brighton, they're 15-2 to produce a shock, which, for clarity, is to win the game, not just having a shot on goal.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only, begambleaware.org, and when the fun stops, what do? You stop. Scotland, where one of Partick Thistle, Queen of the South, or Alloa, and not Alloa, who all play down in the Scottish Championship, are heading for a relegation playoff. The reason I mention all of this, apart from an opportunity to get Alloa right, is that Partick have taken the whole names in an envelope game to the next level. Have you seen this?
No.
The assistant manager, Brian Kerr, WhatsApped their players ahead of their relegation game with Queen of the South. He said, "Boys, big game on Saturday. We want each of you to bring in your starting 11 on a piece of paper in a blank envelope. You hand it in at training. No need to speak to each other about it. This is your team and who you would want on that pitch at 3 o'clock on Saturday from our squad." Manager Gary Caldwell said, "The lads were brilliant with it. In pressure situations, you know who's going to be there by your side." Or I guess you know who you want to be there by your side.
I don't see the point at all.
So he's basically, they would like to know who players would like to play with so that they can factor that in. You know, who are the...
So what, because three guys said, "Oh, I want Michael Cox in midfield." Yeah. And the manager goes, "Oh, yeah, they're right. I'm going to do that."
All right.
Well, presumably they have to choose players that were at Partick Thistle.
I'm not available on Saturday.
No, I know.
I'm at Bournemouth.
Right.
Pushing the envelope.
Steve Kerr, the Golden State Warrior head coach in the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
Last season in the playoffs, let some of his players do the team talk during one of the timeout, which a lot of, I mean, the opposition team and a lot of people thought was quite disrespectful towards the opposition. Yeah. So he basically stood up there and his players, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, did the team talk during the timeout.
Excellent. Is there a sport that you don't like, Julian?
So snooker, I watch.
It's not a sport, is it?
Oh, here we go. We don't have time for that.
What about another game involving sticks? Ice hockey.
I love ice hockey.
Do you? All right. You'll be excited to know there's a new Totally Ice Hockey show coming up. Oh, my word, to coincide with the Ice Hockey World Championships taking place in Bratislava and Košice.
I'm genuinely intrigued by the rest of Jules' sentence.
Oh.
No, but he says he watches it, so I'm intrigued why...
Yeah, I find it fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't watch it for as long as I watch other sports.
Is it because you don't know the people involved?
I don't know, I do. I do follow, care. Yeah.
Yeah. Duncan, Trump, what's the sport that you would walk fastest away from?
Rugby union, I think.
Yeah, right?
That's Michael? The correct answer.
Okay. Yeah. I won't say mine, just in case, you know, there's a gig in it.
What's yours? So,
no, I won't, just in case somebody... Imagine if I was to say snooker and then they go, "Oh, yeah, he doesn't like snooker."
But
just saying, people... like, career-wise, that's suicide.
But would people go to you for snooker anyway?
Well, they went to me for football.
Have you ever said before that football, you don't like football?
No.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But no. I'm just saying, like, you know, I never played snooker, but I never played football either. So, you know.
True.
I spoke Italian. That was my CV was one line. Monday, it's going to... Well, Michael, you're back with us alongside Daniel Story and Sasha Gurionov.
Yeah.
We might ask you to bring in envelopes with who you think should be on Thursday's show.
Okay. Yeah. I'd have
to do
that.
That'd be kind of interesting, wouldn't it? But that wraps it up for today's Totally Football Show. Do hope you'll be joining us after the weekend, that you have a super bank holiday weekend, listener. Many thanks, Duncan, Julianne and Michael, and we'll catch up with you then.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.